two home games for Reading FC this week provided the team with a great chance to reinstill some momentum and gather some crucial points in the fight against relegation. However, a 2-0 defeat to Luton and 4-3 thriller against Huddersfield left the Royals on the brink of the bottom three. Welcome to the Tarleton Podcast, episode 287, the show by Reading fans for Reading fans. I am Mark May, your host, and joining me tonight to talk about one of the, well, certainly one of the more interesting games that probably followed one of the least interesting games that's happened at Reading for a long time. Ben Thomas, the view from the Dolan for the Tarleton. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, good, thanks, mate. It's been a weird week again, which is what we come to expect from this club. But yeah, you're right, sort of two very, very different games, but unfortunately yielded no points, which is, as we all know, exactly what we need. So yeah, hopefully we can sort that out in due course.
Yeah, that's definitely the, you know, at times in the season, you can say that you'll accept a good performance and not a great result. If that might have been for every reason on Saturday, now is the time onwards to get some good results in the bag. We'll be talking about that. We'll also have the mailbag coming up later on and some news bites with the under-23s in action as we're recording, actually, and a new signing, in fact, as well to talk about. So we'll have that later on. Before we go into the recap, big thank you, as always, to our sponsors, ZCZ Films, and our Patreon subscribers. So let's go into it then. Let's talk about Luton 2, Reading 0 and Huddersfield 4, Reading 3.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
The run back to our last win, Ben, is all the way back to November 27th. It's the last time that Reading won a game in the long distant memories of winning at Swansea with Andy Carroll's rowboat and all that sort of stuff, which we probably thought was going to propel us onto greater things. But as it is, that was our last win. And if there's ever a game, well, perhaps not even the most, this is the game that is most embodying of that. But if there was ever a game that didn't look like Reading were going to win, it was the one against Luton in midweek.
Yeah, it was dire, really. I think, you know, we can look at Kidderminster and we can look at Fulham and we can go, okay, they're awful results, you know, really, really awful results, standalone results anyway. But in the context of the season, you know, it's dire. And I think, really, you're looking at Luton and we've had the ridiculous soundbite from Pauno, which has been turned into hundreds of memes, probably. You know, even the Luton admin got in on the game afterwards about it. But, you know, there was no response. There was no hard-hitting focus from the team. There was nothing. There was nothing off the pitch in the stands. There was nothing on the pitch in terms of the desire or the lack of desire that I saw anyway. There was just nothing at all. And the frustrating thing is that, you know, with all due respect to Luton, they were there for the taking and we just made it look very, very easy for them. And they won't have had an easier game. You know, it was very, very difficult to watch it. And I went from kind of being embarrassed in the Fulham game previous, you know, the previous week to just being really sad. It was like watching, you know, the club die right in front of you without being too dramatic. It was very, very poor. And I think the concern for me at that point was that he'd come out and said that we're going to do this. We're going to be tougher. We're going to be stronger. We're going to be faster. We're going to be all these kind of words that he came out with. And actually it was the complete opposite. And I just, you know, the concern around not being able to raise the mentality of the players for that type of game, given the results we'd had previously, was very, very concerning. And it didn't fill me with confidence going into Saturday, to be honest. But, you know, there was literally nothing against Luton. We were lucky to keep it to two goals, really, because, you know, they were having a bit of fun sort of moving forward. And it was very, very, as I said, very sad to watch. And I couldn't wait to get out of that and get home and kind of just try and switch off. So very, very difficult to stomach and very difficult to reflect on. You know, everything about the club at that point was just a massive concern, really.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the case. The Reading fans certainly walking away from that game. The word nothing, I think, is really the best way of describing this game, because there's almost nothing to talk about, because it was just a game that produced nothing for Reading fans to grasp onto or anything. you know, Tom Holmes with the own goal, and then Campbell scoring in the second half. Just my Luton supporting friend who was in the away and said that it didn't even feel like they were that good, Luton, and yet they just, it was just such an easy evening for them. And Reading then going into Saturday with the Huddersfield game, Huddersfield who are playoff pushing this year, really needed some sort of spark of optimism, Reading. And I suppose it came in the team news that came back. Rinwasser, who'd started the Luton game, was fit to continue for Huddersfield. This week, we've had Drinkwater, Morrison, Yeardom and Rama were back for the Huddersfield game. Lucas Zhao starting up front for the first time since he injured his hip right at the start of the season. So it actually looked like a good 11 that that Reading were able to put out. And I mean, if nothing was what happened in Luton, everything happened against Huddersfield, isn't it? It was just from the word go, it was just such a mad one. And why was that? Was it just both teams were completely open at the back? Were Reading actually playing, you know, pretty well, scored two pretty similar goals through Jan Puskas? Why was this game just almost out of nowhere such a mad encounter?
We've been a tough few days leading up to that. You know, there was a lot of talk about the kind of meeting that Star had, which obviously I was part of the club, you know, a lot of kind of chat around that. There was a lot of talk about potentially the players coming back in, you know, Jaria was around, Zhao was around as well. So, you know, there really needed to be a reaction. You know, we've been begging for a reaction for a couple of weeks, and it felt like within the first 5 minutes, we were on it, absolutely on it. And the goal from Zhao was great, very well worked. You know, we've kind of toyed with the idea a number of times on this podcast about having the two up front and playing that kind of 4-4-2 diamond was something that we've kind of hypothesized about before, and it was great to see that, you know, on paper, and then we start really well. But without sounding too negative, we kind of almost scored too early because we didn't set ourselves defensively at all well. They came back into the game pretty quickly, obviously then got another one in it, and by that point you just knew it was going to be a free-for-all. You know, the Zhao goal was very well worked. Nice ball through, similar sort of vein to the Puskas goal, which I thought was probably the best goal we scored on the day. So they, you know, they were active. You know, the balls were going in the right areas, but we just couldn't get control of their front players, and they were kind of pushing us all the time to kind of defend. We weren't doing the basics right. Admittedly, there were some blocks, you know, block tackles that we were able to put in. But generally, organisational-wise, it was just all over the place. It was, you know, it was like a game of FIFA in some respects, really. Again, we come out on the wrong side of a result that probably before kickoff, everyone would have been chuffed with a draw, definitely delighted with a win, and suddenly we're on the end of a 4-3 loss. So it's another difficult one to take. And you know, there were positives, but at the end of the day, as I've kept saying all the way through, we have to get points on the board. It doesn't matter how we play. We win 1-0, 2-1, 4-3, whatever. It doesn't matter. We just need to get these points on the board and kind of, you know, really stamp our authority on games, because at the moment we're only going in one direction. And it's difficult. It is difficult. He tried to mix it up. He's brought some players back in that we haven't had previously, but, you know, the result is still the same. So are we looking now for him to kind of play that role with those players? Are we looking for him to then change up for QPR in terms of formation and tactics? Very, very difficult. We'll just have to see. But it was a difficult, another difficult result to take, bearing in mind that, you know, parts of our play, particularly in the final third, were very, very good and very positive.
Well, that's the thing. And I want to get onto the kind of positivity element in a second, but for just on the performance of itself, I mean, George Puskas scoring, he deserves credit to have finally broken the deadlock for his season. It shouldn't have taken until the end of January, but it's happened now. It's done. We're all very happy for him and very pleased that he was able to make that contribution. But I suppose almost the Zhao goal in particular is probably one of the first actual enjoyable moments we've had at the Select Car Leasing Stadium in the Derby game. Which in itself didn't exactly last very long, did it? On the defending, I mean, maybe playing devil's advocate a bit too much here, but were we actually as bad as four goals conceded suggested? Because the first goal was deflected. Second one, it's not great, but it's a bit of pinball. It kind of lands at the right man, and you know, it just it falls nicely for Huddersfield, doesn't it? It doesn't always do that. The third goal is just a keeper error, and it, the fourth goal is a really good hit from outside the box. Were we in a sense, you know, was it entirely justified to is it entirely justified to criticise the defending for the goals, given that actually like two or three of those goals won't happen most days of the week?
Well, I think short answer is yes, because it. You know, you don't just look at the back five or the back four or whatever system we're playing. You look at the whole team defensively, and we this season we've not been able to defend as a team. So, you know, we brought Drinkwater in at the start of the season. His form has massively dipped. We haven't had probably the protection that we had last year in terms of Rinomoto and Loren in that kind of double pivot, with one kind of sitting deeper and the other one pushing forward a little bit. It's been a little bit messed up in that kind of central midfield role, or roles rather, and no one's really got to grips with what they should be doing as a defensive cover. So we've had a few players that have tried it, but it for me, it's not really worked. And so when we talk about defending, we don't just look at, you know, in that case, you know, the back four and the goalkeeper, you look at what's in front of them. And for me, there was just too many runners coming through the middle. There was kind of, you know, wingers probably weren't doing as much defensive work as they potentially could have done to stop those crosses going in. Again, that's not solely down to them, but there needs to be some sort of pressure on the midfield of the opposing team to kind of stop those balls going into the box and getting in those positions. You know, the fourth hole you mentioned was a great hit. But defensively, you know, there was no one out rushing out to kind of just put the slightest bit of pressure on him. It was like statues. You know, take nothing away from the strike because it was absolutely brilliant. But, you know, the point is that there was no kind of pressure for him to hit that ball first time. He just chose to do that. And I think this is where we've got to sharpen up as a team. It's not just that back defensive unit. It's kind of everything else around. You know, Drinkwater did come in for a lot of criticism from fans on Saturday. I didn't think he was horrific. I didn't think he was brilliant, but I said I don't think he was the worst player on the pitch. And I think really it's about taking responsibility, and that's what, you know, what I felt all the way through the season is that there are players that come in, change personnel, but within games we don't take responsibility. We don't show up. You know, you contrast that with, you know, the women yesterday, and you think, well, at one point they were 2-0 down, obviously the keeper went off, and there was a brilliant quote from Tash Harden who after the game said, you know, we always demand that players show up, do their absolute best and take responsibility. And for me, for a lot of the core in the men's team this year, that's not happened. And that's the most frustrating thing about it. And this kind of constant shift between where the problems lie at the club, you know, the players do have to step up a little bit now. And I think once we were kind of getting ourselves back into the game on Saturday, there should have been someone there kind of in that midfield role to go, right, this is what we're going to do. We're going to control the ball, control the pace of the game and kind of help our defence out a little bit. You know, Morrison's come back in after a very long absence. He's played, what, 2 full games in a week? That's a tough workload for someone who is, to be fair to him, ageing, but also has come back from quite a long injury. And it shouldn't just be on him. It should be everyone else around him as a collective body to be able to stop these things from happening.
Well, the thing I would say on Morrison as well is that one of the excuses that we have had for basically all season is that injuries have been holding us back. And yeah, obviously players like Morrison and Rinomoto won't be 100% match fit, although this week certainly would have done them a world of good in that sense. But as an excuse, that is now going away. For the team looking ahead, Yaku Mate was back in the under-23s tonight. They're playing Aston Villa. He started that game. We'll see how long he lasts in it. And Tom McIntyre is also back in training, we're hearing today. So, QPR will obviously come too soon for him, but maybe we've got a little bit of a break, about 10 days until the next game after that. Maybe that will be something he can feature in. I mean, to round off the recap then, I just kind of wonder, going forward, is this game something we can actually take hope from, or is that a bit clutching at straws? Can we actually look at a 3-4 defeat at home to Huddersfield and say there are positives and we'll move forward with them and we are optimistic for the future or the short-term future? Or is that just asking a little bit too much? Because for me, I kind of felt a bit more optimistic after the game because it wasn't a stupid useless defeat, basically, that we've had so often. But we have got some, you know, we've got some really tough games coming up, and we go to QPR next. We'll talk about that later, but they're on really good form. Then we've got the weekend off, I think, because the Stoke game is postponed because they're in the FA Cup next round. And then after that, we've got Bristol City away. So, you know, two really tough games coming up. Obviously, two games that we're very capable of going and doing well in. But it just feels to me like after this game kind of settled down and the madness of it, I just kind of felt that other than the players coming back, and obviously, you know, I don't think that defending for the goals in particular was horrific. And I do think that the goals we scored were decent. But it does kind of feel for me that we haven't necessarily gained that much from where we were kind of 3 days beforehand after this game.
Well, I think the main thing that I took away from it was that there is a bit of fight and there is a bit of resilience in this team. You know, coming back from what, you know, 2-1, 3-2, whatever it was. I can't remember the scoring sequence now. But there is an element there that we know now that there is something left in the tank with these players. And I think up until that point, standing at the turn of this calendar year, we've not seen that. You know, we had Derby, Kidderminster, Fulham, Middlesbrough. And then this was kind of the first game where we got an opportunity to be able to see, well, hold on, there is something still there. There is a little bit of fire burning in some of these players. The flip side of that, though, and I know you talked about trying to get positivity, but that's got to be the bare minimum from anyone supporting a football team, whatever level they're at. You've got to have fight, you've got to have passion, you've got to have desire, and you've got to have a bit of resilience. And we've not seen that for weeks with this group of players. So my kind of concern would be, well, why are they able to do it in that game but not in the Luton game? And you can talk about different players coming back, as we've mentioned, but it's just the mentality of the players there as a group. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope, you know, in 3 weeks' time, 4 weeks' time, we're sat there having 1-3 on the bounce or whatever. We go, okay, we have turned a corner. But the point is, we're still losing games. You know, we have scored. I said this straight after the game. We've scored 3 goals. And they were all right. You know, certainly the 2 goals were brilliant. You know, the link-up play from the midfield to the strikers were fantastic. But ultimately, we still don't have the points on the board. And I hope that they can look at the Huddersfield game and go, well, we can recover from some of those setbacks in the game. We've not been doing that previously. So as a collective body, have we taken steps forward here? I'm hoping that they look at that and say yes, and they can use this to kick on. You know, the players coming back have got a point to prove. Of course they have. You know, they want to play. They seem eager to get out and do that. You know, obviously we mentioned Yak's kind of playing, what was it, half a game he played today, something like that. Tom McIntyre coming back. So there is a little bit of hope there, but I just really hope that they understand now that the situation we're in is pretty bad from a league point of view. And if nothing else, just go out and give it a bit of fight, a bit of passion every single game, because we've not seen that previously. So that would be the kind of the one positive that I take away from that, you know, moving forward into the next block of games that we've got.
Well, yeah, we'll hear from Velko Panovic now before we go. And yeah, later on, and we'll be talking about that QPR game that now seems like, it always seems like a big chance to turn the season around at this stage, doesn't it? Yeah, that's on the horizon with a free midweek. But let's go. Yeah, we'll hear from Velko Panovic now, then we'll go into the mailbag and hear what you guys are saying out there on the Twitter sphere.
I think overall, improvement, much better cohesion, aggressiveness from the beginning. We started taking the lead, we started very well. I think determination was fantastic today. Recovered, important players for us, like Lucas, like Baba, Yeats, Puskas, Moro. That helped the team a lot to improve in overall performance, especially in attack. I think in attack we were very, very strong, 3 goals, and dangerous in most of the 75 minutes until, for obvious reasons, we lost a little bit of freshness and clarity. But those are the positives. Negatives, 4 goals conceded at home. After scoring 3, it's unacceptable.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
I just realised that my exit there from the recap sounded very much like a bit of a midday radio DJ. Like, and we'll hear from you guys on the Twitter sphere.
That's quite good. I was chatting to myself.
Yeah, I'm not keen on the Partridge-esque comments, but there we go. We'll hear from Team Bennett first. You can always get in touch on the Twitter, the Facebook, and the Gmail, thetylerstent@gmail.com, get your thoughts in and everything like that. And we always put out the question on the Twitter to hear from you guys, to ask for the questions for the mailbag. We'll get on to what you did when we asked that in a bit. But Dean Bennett with the first question this week saying, do you think Reading are League One bound? Do you see the manager turning this around? And I suppose this is what we haven't particularly been doing on the podcast recently, Ben, is laying our cards on the table and saying, do we actually think Reading are going to go down? And, you know, from what we've spoken about, and I think it's funny as well that we don't even talk about anymore, because Paunovic, we've had our kind of, you know, debates over whether we want him to stay, and then I think most of the fan base has now just settled into the fact that probably do want him to go, but he isn't, and that's kind of it. So getting angry about it and debating it more and more feels a bit pointless. So in terms of, do I think Reading are going down? I still don't. It can be naivety, it can be, you know, blind optimism, whatever you want to call it, but I still think that if this team is fit and knows what it's doing, obviously there's, you know, I have questions over the manager as to whether he can do it, but ultimately we don't have to win every game to stay up. We just have to put a certain amount of points on the board, bit of momentum for a few weeks, and, you know, it's not the hardest thing in the world for this group of players to stay up. So I'm leaning, not 100% that Reading are going to stay up, but certainly towards the 60-65% chance that I think Reading are going to stay up. I don't know whether you think that is, you know, foolish or whatever.
No, I mean, you know, first of all, it's a great question, Dean. Honestly, I said this to him earlier. Well, not, I didn't say it to him. I said it virtually on the, you know, the power of Twitter. But it's a stunning question, and it's something I've been thinking about sort of since he posted it. Not in a weird way. I wasn't thinking about you like that, Dean. I'm just saying I'm thinking about the question. All right. What? The short answer for me is no. I don't think that he personally can keep us up, because I don't see. You know, I'm gonna go back to that Luton game, and it will either be the game that relegates us, or it will be the game that has somehow galvanised the team. Forget Kidderminster, forget the Fulham game. You know, that Luton game for me was an absolute punch in the stomach because of the performance and the mentality that we saw, or rather didn't see. So my honest answer to that question is no, I don't think Paunovic will keep us up. Do I think we have enough quality in the players and enough aptitude in the players potentially to keep us up? Yes, I do. So come hook or by crook or whatever, I honestly do feel that, like you, Mark, we will end up staying in this division. I don't think we're going to go on a magnificent run at this stage. My personal opinion is that I think we will sign, you know, a couple of other players that will help us out. I think those players coming back are going to have a massive difference. But I don't think that Paunovic at this stage, as harsh as it sounds, will be able to keep us up, because he's not shown for me in recent weeks that he is able to motivate those players. And I like the guy. You know, I've said that time and again. I said it before Christmas. I don't want to see him sacked. But, you know, we've kind of come to probably the worst month the club's had for years that I can remember. And he's still in a job. So I honestly cannot see anything changing on that front now. I really can't. Bearing in mind he's out of contract in the summer anyway, everyone knows that. From the club's point of view, from a financial point of view, what's the point of getting rid of him? Now, we'd say as fans, yeah, we want to see someone else come in to galvanise this group of players. But I still think, again, like you, Mark, it might be naive, but I still think there's enough of a mentality shift in that team to be able to keep us up. That's my honest answer. I hope that we do stay up. I've never been more concerned or anxious about the football team and the football club than I have right now. And I think us getting relegated would be an absolute disaster for a number of reasons. But I something just tells me that there is enough quality in that team to be able to keep us in the league. And I know people say, we haven't seen it, where have they been? But, you know, there's mitigating factors that have been with us throughout the season where that's not been able to happen. And, you know, Saturday we saw the strongest squad that we've seen in a long time, and, you know, we were we were close to winning. I know that that's small comfort because we didn't, without contradicting myself, but we were in the game and we were competitive. Chuck in another two or three players that we know their quality, we know what they can do on their day, and we've got a very good match day squad there. Whether or not he's able to use them effectively, I don't know. I don't think that he can. I don't think that he knows how to do that. But there is something telling me that we will be all right and we will be able to stay up.
Yeah, I suppose I don't think we can rule out Paunovic going before the end of the season. It is only January and we've seen things happen quickly with Reading at the moment, whether that's because they've been brewing and we just don't hear about it through the media or whatever, or because, you know, De Jong makes up his mind one night and then the next morning Paunovic will go or whatever. But I still think there's a chance that he could go. But yeah, it definitely feels like he's sticking around. And I do think that ultimately, you know, the manager who could get us to seventh place last year is still capable of us avoiding relegation. We're not even in the relegation zone at the moment. I think Peterborough are playing tomorrow night with a game in hand. But even so, I still think that I'm edging on the side of us staying up. What happens next season when all our players leave? We'll talk about that later. Whatever league we're in. As I say, the tweet that we asked out earlier today to get some questions for the podcast, quite a lot of questions of this nature. So I'm just going to ask the one of them from Mateus, saying, can you explain to us in layman's terms everything we need to know about Kier Drachman, his relationship with the club manager and players that we've had here? Now, for those who aren't aware of Kier Drachman, he's the agent of several top football players, as he has been for decades. Very big name in the game, whether that's Reading or whatever. I think he's had very close ties with Everton at the moment, which I don't believe their fans are too happy about. And the same can be said for Arsenal. Just stating facts that they're not particularly happy about what that relationship is. But the stating facts, officially, he hasn't got a relationship with the club. I believe I don't know, you in your star meetings, Ben, might know more about what the club accept goes on, but kind of him being a close personal friend of De Jong, I think, has been reported slash well known. He's been involved. Reports suggest that he's involved in basically every transfer, but I believe that's kind of been denied, and that his influence with the club, certainly there is no official capacity that he has with the club, but he's obviously kind of, you know, to some extent involved. And I suppose the annoying thing for fans is that we actually don't really know the degree that he's involved in.
Who are we talking about, sorry?
Kier Drachman. Or has that letter come through has it come through the letterbox for you?
I don't know that name. Is he important? We got another question? No, I'm joking. So the official line, and everyone knows, is that he's a friend of the owners. He's attended games with the owner. Nothing we're saying here is out of turn, right? Now, according to what I can see, which everyone else can see, this is not like a star secret society conspiracy theory going on. He runs, or he's part of a company called Sports Invest. And from what I can see, and from kind of the research that I've kind of done separately, we've got Nelson Abbey and Kamara on the books of that agency, right? So beyond that, we're literally just clutching at straws in terms of not we, but Reading fans and people connected with the club that aren't on the board are kind of clutching at straws with his involvement. So, you know, we obviously have to be very careful what we say on this recording. But, you know, in terms of his involvement, we just don't know. It's like any rumour in football. So until the club come out and say one thing or the other thing, all we're going on is kind of hearsay and as I said, rumours. Now, we're led to believe that he's involved in Everton. There was pictures of him at the Everton game at the weekend against Aston Villa. We know that he's been involved in other football clubs before. But again, if you went back to kind of the fan base of those clubs, they'd probably tell you something completely different in terms of his involvement and what their view on him is. So it's very, very difficult. And I know that, you know, Math is trying to get us all thrown in prison with that question. But it's a difficult one to answer because we have no factual information based on that. He's not listed as a staff member at the club. We know that he's been in attendance, as I said, but that's pretty much it. And I think, you know, that becomes very concerning for kind of Reading fans in general, because, you know, we all like to know where we stand. We like to know who the owner is. We know who the CEO is. We don't know who, you know, the person in charge of ticketing is, and so on and so on. So we're used to, as a football club, knowing faces, knowing people's roles, and knowing what they're kind of accountable for. So that's kind of where we're at the moment with this, you know, story or non-story, basically.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? When it comes down to, I think, effectively, obviously, people, fans on social media who aren't a massive, who really don't like him, the kind of desire is to kind of pin all of the bad things about the club on this one character who, you know, is involved to some extent or isn't involved or whatever you want to call it. But I just find it very difficult to, I find it difficult to be happy or to be, you know, content with the idea that there is one guy potentially, you know, having a big influence behind the scenes that is off the record. But at the same point, I feel like it's not the smartest thing in the world to assume that all of the bad things going on at the club is because of a guy pulling the strings off the record and all that sort of stuff. It just feels like it doesn't feel like tangible enough to really grasp and get angry about, as it were.
It is worth pointing out, again, this is factual information. This is all out there. On transfermarket.co.uk, there is, on our list of current players or squad players, there is 11 players that are kind of on our books or have been on our books. I'll include Andy Carroll in that. And they're not listed as having an agent. So that's kind of 11 players. So that, you know, is that interesting? I don't know. Is that the norm for other football clubs? I mean, I haven't had time to go and look at, you know, an equivalent like Sheffield United or whatever. But, you know, having 11 players on that list with no agent listed, I don't know. Is that normal? Is that?
Yeah, I think that in the past, those sort of things have been kind of disputed or denied. I don't think those databases are necessarily perfectly up to date, is kind of what people say usually. But yeah, I think ultimately it's just one of those things that we as Reading fans, I think almost this is one of the things as modern football, you kind of said there, and it's not guaranteed in modern football, but it's almost one of the things you have to come to terms with somehow, whether you're happy about it or not. And I never tell people that they should be happy about this, is that when you have an owner who isn't someone like John Medeski, who isn't a local area, you know, see them round town in purple turtle sort of owner, you're going to end up with people associated with the owner, whether it's our CEO, who is some, Dayong Pang, isn't someone that we know particularly much about, and all this sort of stuff. You get people who we aren't familiar with, or, you know, aren't public figures and all this sort of stuff. When they're not the Nicky Hammonds turning up on BBC Radio Berkshire before a game a few times a year, and they're not the, you know, the other familiar faces. You know, we haven't got the scout that's the left back's dad anymore and all this sort of stuff. It's just how, unfortunately, it's just one of the things I think of modern football that happens at a number of clubs. And whether it's for our benefit or not, I think we can debate that a lot. And we ultimately don't know the facts as to whether it is or isn't, because, as I say, I think it's, I'm cautious against pinning the blame on everything that's bad on one character who's not ultimately officially part of the club. So we'll move on, and, you know, ultimately, if any developments do happen, we'll always mention them on the show and on the podcast. Tom HSN, other than a reserve keeper, he says in brackets apparently, but that's now confirmed, which we'll talk about in a bit, what areas do we need to strengthen / prioritise given the highly unlikely occurrence we actually do sign anyone? We'll talk about the signing we have made in News Bites, so that'll be coming up. But outfield players then, Ben, we've got a week until the deadline. We'll probably have our next show before the transfer deadline day, so we'll give a full-on preview for that then. But as we go forward now, we haven't sold anyone yet. We've signed one player, a goalkeeper, and outfield players, I just think it's almost a case of anywhere is good strengthened, really. If it's a fullback, then probably not the most important place, but could do with it. Potentially attacking players, someone who can play out wide, but, you know, Ovi Ajari is another player who might be coming back soon. It's just really hard it is almost a case that any man through the door at the moment with a bit of experience, a bit of talent, I think you'd accept it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, on that, me personally, I would take any kind of deal right now, whether that's loan, whether that's a short-term contract to the end of the season, whatever. I mean, I don't think we're going to be bringing players in that we're going to go, right, here's a 2 or 3 year contract at this stage, given the overhaul that we all anticipate in the summer. I don't see that happening. So I think they're going to be short-term deals until the end of the season.
A quick yes or no, will Andy Carroll sign?
I think he'll come back. I just think we will re-sign Andy Carroll.
I don't think we will, but sorry, that was a bit of a segue from Tom's question. It's not my job to give questions in my bag, it's everyone else's. So yeah, anyway, back to the original point.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we will re-sign Andy Carroll for the sheer fact that I think if he was going to go somewhere else, he would have done that by now. There are a number of reasons why I think he will come back, but I just have a feeling that he will potentially come back to us and play a role, really. I'd like to see a bit of extra cover in kind of that defensive midfield role, if that's the route we're going to go down. You know, if he's going to pin his colours to the mast and go, right, we're going to go 4-4-2, then we need something else in that position for me personally. You know, we're in this bizarre situation where we might have just an embarrassment of riches coming back now, because obviously Halilovic has kind of just not dropped off the face of the earth, but everyone's kind of forgotten about him, so we've got to come back. You know, if we get McIntyre back pretty soon, we've got and Scott Dan as well, then we've got 4 able-bodied centre-backs. So yeah, I mean, I think anywhere they could look at and go, he can add a bit of bite, a bit of experience, a bit of know-how to get us out of this position, then yeah, for sure. It does depend on what we let go. You know, there's obviously been rumours about Puskas going on loan to everyone in Europe, it seems. John Swift rumour has kind of gone quiet. Obviously, the question mark around Liam Moore, although I don't, you know, as you guys said last week, I don't think he'll play in a red and shirt again. So I think he's out the picture regardless. We can count him out. But I just think anywhere, yeah, like you, I just think anything we can do that's going to kind of help us out. You know, technically we've got two spaces left in the squad with Raphael and Carroll going. Obviously, I don't know if Liam Moore is allowed to be removed from that 25-man squad. I'm not sure the regulations on that. Ollie put out a tweet earlier about, you know, the new goalkeeper, which we'll talk about later, not actually registering to be one of the 25 because of the amount of appearances he's made. So there is an element of that, really, where we've got a few spaces to fill, and you know, everybody will be able to kind of help us out, or rather anybody will be able to kind of help us out at this stage. But I just feel that we're, you know, getting those players back and getting extra players in will kind of help us out massively, kind of moving forward into the next set of games that we have.
As I say, we'll see by transfer deadline day what Reading can pull off. Paunovic has kind of suggested that we'll have to sell before we can buy, but even on the sales front, in terms of rumours and whatnot, doesn't feel like there's particularly much going on that front. So we will see. Let's head into news bites now and talk about the new man who's arrived today.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
Carl Hein of Estonia and Arsenal is Reading's new goalkeeper. He's the first signing of the month. He's arrived on loan till the end of the season. This follows Raphael's confirmed move to Cruzeiro last week. So he's effectively come in as the backup goalkeeper. It's an interesting time to do this deal, I guess, really, isn't it? Because Reading have basically given Luke Southwood the number one goalkeeper shirt without kind of any, you know, there's not been any competition really, with everyone knowing that basically Raphael was on his way out. James Holden, the under-23s goalkeeper who's playing tonight, he was the one on the bench for the Huddersfield game, which we presume Hein and Southwood will now compete for. I suppose the questions that have been kind of floating around today since the signing, whether it's worth signing a goalkeeper at this point. We've had Jocke Landerson, who was at Morecambe, has come back from his loan stint, although given the fact that he's not featuring for the under-23s at the moment, kind of suggests that he's either about to leave on loan again or is injured. Konya Boyce-Clark again, I'm not entirely sure where he's at the moment because, as I say, not involved in the under-23s and also not out on loan anywhere. So it's an interesting one. Personally, I'm for it because I think with Southwood's errors recently, We're all very kind to academy players at points, and certainly young players, and that's good that we are like that. But fundamentally, those errors have cost us points recently. And if Hine is someone who's A, cheap, which I assume he is, there's no reason he'd be on a big wage at Arsenal, and B, you know, young, talented, eager to go and get some games, I think it's a decent signing.
I mean, I've kind of tempered my view a little bit, because earlier I just couldn't understand it. It just absolutely baffled me. And I think it was probably a bit of a, you know, kind of an emotional hangover from the kind of weekend and other bits and pieces around our football club, really. So firstly, it's always good to kind of have different opinions floating around. And I can see why, you know, yourself and someone else that commented on the tweet I put out was actually this kind of does make a little bit of sense. What I kind of don't understand, and maybe I'm about to answer this myself, I don't know, but we obviously had Anderson on loan at Morecambe, and we brought him back for like a week, clearly because the club wanted to take a look at him. They've clearly decided that he's not going to be able to challenge Southwood or whatever for whatever reasons. You know, as you said, we don't really know what's happened to Boyce Clark, so kind of take him out of the picture altogether. Holden was on loan at Maidenhead, I believe. So that's that, you know, all due respect to him, it's not the right environment to chuck him into a, you know, relegation battle at the bottom end of the Championship. So they've clearly seen something, I hope, in terms of the recruitment group to do with this goalkeeper. They think he will be able to help us. What I'm not sure about, though, is what Anderson has done in the short time that he's been back at the club to make them think that he's not capable of competing, because he's been on loan, he's been playing regular football, all right, you know, further down the leagues, but he still had regular competition, similar style of football, but less quality to what we're playing now. So what I'm not sure about is what's happened to him to make the current coach and staff think, okay, well, he's not capable of competing at the moment. Now,
I think on the point for Anderson, quickly before you move on, the only thing I would say is that, and Sim, the editor of Tyler Sten, pointed this out on Twitter, and I didn't realise until he did, that he was actually dropped by Morecambe about 2 months ago before he came back after a 4-0 defeat to MK Dons, I think it was. That was his last game. So ultimately, I think by the looks of it, but the fact he's not playing for the under-23 side, can only assume he's going out on loan again.
I guess if he was dropped by Morecambe or whatever, then they'd be looking to ship him out to a place he's going to play potentially. I don't know. I do kind of get it in some respects, because obviously Raphael was on wages that we probably couldn't afford or didn't want to afford at this stage. That makes sense. And fair play to him for kind of cutting and running on that contract, because a lot of other players wouldn't have done that. So huge respect to him for doing that. But I'm just not sure that the age and profile of this guy coming in, that, you know, if we're going to say if the coaching staff are seriously considering dropping Southwood, which again is could have a podcast on itself, you know, is this guy the right one to be coming in? Bearing in mind he's had very little football, he's very young, and he's on loan with us as well. You know, I might be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. And if he does come on and he plays, best luck to him. I hope he does the best that he can. But I don't know. I'm just not sure it really fits where we're currently at the moment. And I think, you know, reading the room, a lot of people kind of feel the same way as well. So time will tell. But something tells me I'm just not really convinced on this particular signing at the moment.
No, and it's a fair point about his lack of experience and everything. That's almost what you don't want as a Reading fan at the moment. You want someone you can rely on ultimately in between the posts. We obviously had Emi Martinez came in a few years ago. I saw someone put on Twitter, and quite rightly they did say that people doubted that move when he came in. Obviously he's a different level of experience, and he proved to be a masterstroke. One player who did come in with a very real lack of experience was João Virginia, the player from Everton, who ultimately ended up playing about two games, making errors in both, and that was that for him. That obviously isn't something the club can really afford to do at the moment. So hopefully Carl Hine shows to be something else. There's also very realistic chance he just sits on the bench the entire time, which I'm sure Arsenal probably aren't happy about, but then maybe that was the only offer they got. So so we'll see how it goes. Obviously, the QPR game on Saturday, we'll see whether he will be in the squad. I think it's safe to say, but whether he starts or not is certainly something that's worth keeping an eye on before the lineup is announced. For the rest of the news bites, we'll go around the teams then, around the other teams of Reading FC. The under-18s beat Norwich 4-1 on the weekend. That bumps them up to 10th in the Premier League table, with 3 league wins in a row now. They've got Brighton next on the 5th. The under-23s, they had a 3-1 Premier League Cup defeat to Norwich. Jeremiah Ocampeter scored for Reading in that. They're currently playing Aston Villa, which is almost finished now, but I believe it's 2-1 to Aston Villa. Yakumete starting in that one, with Jamari Clark scoring with that one 2-1 at halftime, as I say. And the women's team, 2-0 down at halftime against Birmingham, 3-2 win at the Select Car Leasing. And this team is just doing so well at the moment. They're truly in the picture for, you know, maybe even a top three finish or something like that. It's just been a delight to see.
Yeah, I mean, look, they've been brilliant, you know, absolutely brilliant. And I think it's testament to Kelly Chambers and the you know, the rest of the coaching team, how together they are. Some brilliant players in that team, really. You know, the goal from Emma yesterday was just the absolute peach, but the build-up play as well, and the resilience that they showed getting back into the game after the setback with Maloney and Gold. So yeah, look, you want to see our teams doing well, regardless of what age group or you know, where they're currently playing. You know, we want all our teams to be doing well because it's great for the club. We need some positivity, you know, let's be honest. And they're bringing it in spades at the moment. So really, really delighted with them. You know, when I kind of saw the score, I was like, okay, well, it's 2-0 down now. But the resilience and the determination and everything is great. You know, they've got some cracking players, really. You know, Woodham I really like. Obviously, Harden's been fantastic this season as well. So there's a lot of players there that really have shown, you know, great commitment and great sort of determination to turn their awful start around, as we said, you know, a couple of months ago. So credit to Kelly Chambers and Mitch and all the staff there. It's been lovely to see. So well done, and I hope you can keep it going.
Yeah, they've got Brighton away in the FA Cup on January the 30th. So a big game there, because the cup run really would solidify, you know, this being a good season for Reading FC women. And I suppose the biggest compliment I can almost pay them at this point is that when I saw the score being 2-0 at halftime, or just before halftime, obviously Birmingham aren't the best team in the WSL, far from it, but I never thought that the game would finish 2-0. I actually thought, you know, this isn't over, and you know, they absolutely proved that right. And that was, yeah, it's just a really nice season to be going on for Reading women at the moment. Hopefully, might be able to get one or two of the members of that team on the podcast at some point. I've been talking to the club about that, which we would love to happen. So kind of the balls in their court, as we can put it. So let's go on now to the big match preview and talk about what the Reading FC men's team is going to be going on with this Saturday.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Rs!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Well, it doesn't get any easier. As we've said before, it's QPR on Saturday. Unbeaten in the last 6 meetings, Reading are, funnily enough, for QPR, winning 2. Should have beaten them earlier in the season, but 3-1 up with 10 minutes to go obviously wasn't enough for this team to get 3 points. That's probably one of the many dark days we've had this season, unfortunately. QPR 4th, and they've won 3 games in a row. I suppose the question for this one after the Huddersfield game, obviously, you know, injuries aside, can't assume that anyone's going to be coming back, maybe Ajaria. But what changes do you make to the team for this one then? Because George Puskas has just scored, so I don't think you can take him out. And almost everything, I guess, maybe changes to the defence here and there, but you with the goalkeeper perhaps, but you're not going to take out, you know, Yeda and Rahman, be a bit early to take out Morrison. Holmes as well, as you know, unless Dan is fit, in which case maybe. But this team, do you make any changes to it?
It's difficult because, you know, although they shipped 4 goals, like as you said, Mark, there were kind of green shoots, and I said immediately after the game, I think if he sticks with this system for the next game, you know, the QPR game, then he'd be well within his rights to play the same players, because if he does that again, it doesn't work. Okay, then we'll flip it around. But that was the first time we've done that. And there were parts to the system that worked quite well, obviously parts that weren't. Now, we don't know if that's because of the shape or the fact that the players were having an off day, or just, you know, Huddersfield were you know, better than us in some of those departments, we don't know. So for me personally, I would like to see that team and that system play again, just to see if there's any kind of more improvements. Now, we're all looking at QPR. There's very few Reading fans, if any, that think we're going to go and win the game. So we're heading into a situation where we've got that game and then we've got, what, 2 week break? Because obviously the state game's been moved. A week and a half, something like that. 10 days minimum anyway. And so yeah, that gives them more time to, so it gives them more time to gel, gets more people to come back in. Now, obviously, if that's a complete disaster, then it answers his question and he moves it on. But for me, I say we've got nothing to lose, but, and it's not a throwaway game, but that we're not expected to go and do anything in that game. So we may as well see if we can cope in that system and do something in that system against a team that you know, are very, very good at this stage, and see how we perform and fare against them. You could question that maybe Drinkwater sits out, but then who else do you bring in that position if there's anyone else available at that point? I don't think he'll change the defence. As you said, I think that'll stay as it is. I think we would have had, or no, we would have had a week on the training pitch to be able to work this system. So it would, I don't know, it would just seem foolish to me at this stage to completely rip it up and start again, because we've not been able to field a consistent team. We've not been able to field a consistent system that's shown any signs of working for periods of time this season. So yeah, I'd just leave it as it is and see how we get on.
No, I would as well. And I think ultimately, if you're talking about going back to a different system, well, what system has been good in the last few months that's worth going back to? Like, you know, is it the system that we lost 7-0 in, or the system that we lost 2-0 in? It's not, there's nothing out there for me that is particularly better that's worth moving back to. You might, I mean, I'm not expert in how QPR play, but you might find yourself a bit exposed in a 4-4-2. Ultimately, if you got Rinomota and Lauren in there with Drinkwater and Swift, I think that's a near enough a complete midfield that you need it to be at this level with a bit of organisation.
Just to add to that on the system, you know, there people have argued all the way through the season there's been no system, no plan. I think the one thing we can say about Huddersfield is there was a bit of a plan, there was a bit of a system, and the idea was to get the ball forward as quickly as possible on the floor, you know, using the kind of wingers, using Swift in that kind of advanced midfield role behind them to kind of slot those balls through, and it worked twice. So, you know, very early on in the game against Huddersfield. So again, I just feel like because that particular system sort of worked, whereas we haven't really had any evidence of any other systems previously, just carry on with it and just let them develop it in their own way and kind of start to let their individual quality shine within that system.
Yeah, I think that's certainly probably the best hope that we've got at the moment. Let's talk predictions then. Handbags and Ollie were the only ones to predict two defeats this week. Ben, unfortunately, you didn't get any with Westie. So with myself, Sim and Adam all picking up a single point, the standings are as follows. Westie's on 23 points, Ollie 21, Adam 20. Handbags, well, I mean, after that, we're just far behind. So those are the guys who are topping the tables at the moment. The prediction for this one, I think I'm probably going to say a 2-1 defeat, because I think that we probably will score, certainly playing, you know, the way we played against Huddersfield. I do think that we'll get a chance to have a few attacking moments and everything. But fundamentally, unless we are significantly improved or QPR have an off day, this just feels like the sort of game that they'll just kind of rock up and win. And maybe it'll be a late goal or something like that. But I just don't have, you know, I don't have a huge amount of optimism for this game, even if I do think that the team did definitely improve on Saturday. I don't think, only if we'd have won that game convincingly, did I think that we were going to go to this game and have a comfortable or a really good afternoon.
Yeah, next time we do this, can you just ask me first? Because it just looks like I'm copying now, because I literally wrote down 2-1. So,
I think most people said 2-1. Most people said 2-1 defeat for Luton, to be fair.
Oh, did they? Except me, obviously. So I'm going 2-1 QPR. Yeah, I don't see us getting any result, really. I hope there are still some improvements and some kind of solidified of that system we talked about. But yeah, 2-1 QPR for me.
Well, as I say, we are unbeaten in our last six meetings. So maybe there is something to hold on to for Reading as we go to the Kian Prince Foundation Stadium. Hopefully have a few travelling fans going as well. And as we kind of alluded to earlier, we are on a weekend off afterwards with that Stoke game being postponed. But the 9th, we are away to Bristol City. And a bit of a hectic run after that. We've got Coventry, Peterborough, Preston, Birmingham and Blackpool all in February. So a pretty busy time after we have that weekend off. So I don't think it will do us any harm to have a weekend off, unless, of course, we beat QPR, in which case you want to play again. So, yeah, we'll be back after that QPR game to review everything that happens in West London. As always, Ben, thank you very much for popping on for the podcast.
No problem at all, Mark. Take care, everybody. Enjoy your week without any midweek games, and we'll see you soon.
Absolutely. Plenty of time for Reading to recalibrate and rejuvenate on the training pitch. Our confidence in that happening is perhaps waning a bit these days. But at least Reading, you know, there were potential green shoots on the weekend with the midweek game against Luton, I think, being completely not a great start to the two games at home. But hopefully there is something around the corner, which, I mean, ultimately, this is how I've been ending the podcast for weeks now. And as I started it with today, 27th of November, the last time Reading won a game. We are still in January is kind of my ultimate point for why we were talking earlier about still staying up and everything like that. There is still so much football to be played. We're not even talking about run-ins or business ends of the season yet. And Reading fundamentally aren't even in the drop zone at the moment. So we'll see how the final week of the transfer window goes. We'll see how we go at QPR. We'll reconvene, and maybe there'll be no grandiose message of positivity to end the show this week. But as always, thank you for listening. And as always, come on your arse.
You smile.